Welcome to Bandcamp. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Dan, and this is the podcast where we read band books and try to figure out why they were banned in the first place. This season, we are reading The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. Spoilers are inevitable because we're reading the book out loud in its entirety. If you want to get up to speed without being spoiled, head on over to Bandcamp Season 4, Episode 1, and you can catch up. You can follow us on Instagram at Bandcamp_podcast. Now, before Jen starts reading, let's introduce the third member of our team, our trusty fact-checking robot. Look at this guy. Looking good, pal. Here he is. Give us an update on where we left off last time.
Last time on Bandcamp, Tom Sawyer's ingenuity reached new heights, or perhaps depths, as he and Huck continued their convoluted scheme to free Jim, between slipping items into Aunt Sally's pockets, causing household chaos, and cooking up a crusty concoction in the woods, they find themselves tangled in a web of their own making. Will Aunt Sally ever recover her peace of mind? Will Jim see through the absurdity to grasp the rope of freedom? What happens next? You're about to find out.
So, thank you, robot. Well, with that being said, let's see what happens in Chapter 38 of Huckleberry Finn. Making them pens was a tough job, and so was the saw. And Jim allowed the inscription was going to be the toughest of all. That's the one which the prisoner has to scrabble on the wall. But he had to have it. Tom said he'd got to. There weren't no case of a state prisoner not scribbling his inscription to leave behind in his coat of arms. Look at Lady Jane Grey, he says. Look at Guilford Dudley. Look at old Northumberland. Why, Huck, suppose it is considerable trouble. What you going to do? How you going to get around it? Jim's got to do his inscription and coat of arms. They all do.
No, they don't all do. I wish Tom Sawyer was alive now, because we had a fella break out of prison not too far from here 2 weeks ago by taking his toothpaste cap and putting it in the door of the prison cell so the door didn't latch. And he just left.
Did that really happen?
It really did happen, absolutely.
Oh my God, that's genius.
Yes, this is what I'm saying, Jen. If you ever find yourself, and I think with you it's just a matter of time, if you ever find yourself in the hoosegow, be looking for things you can wedge into the door lock.
I mean, I'll keep it in mind. It is slowly becoming illegal to be a woman in this country, so we'll see. Jim says, "Why, Mars Tom, I hain't no coat of arms. I hain't no nothing but dish your old shirt. And you knows I got to keep de journal on dat." Oh, you don't understand, Jim. A coat of arms is very different. That's right, because Tom's the authority. Well, I says, Jim's right anyway. When he says he ain't got no coat of arms, because he ain't. I reckon I know that, Tom says. But you bet he'll have one before he goes out of this, because he's going out right, and there ain't going to be no flaws in his record. So whilst me and Jim filed away at the pens on a brickbat apiece, Tom set to work to think out the coat of arms. By and by, he said he'd struck so many good ones he didn't hardly know which one to take. Jim said it would take him a year to scrabble such a lot of truck onto the logs with a nail, and he didn't know how to make letters besides, but Tom said he would block them out for him, and then he wouldn't have nothing to do but just follow the lines. So he's gonna basically etch out the coat of arms on the log.
All right.
And Jim's just gonna take a nail and deepen the lines.
Yeah.
All right, then.
I think when you're trying to break out for your freedom, his mind's gonna be obviously on this arts and craft project.
For sure. For
Can
sure.
Can you imagine?
Got right down.
God.
Then pretty soon he says, "Come to think, the logs ain't a going to do. They don't have logs in a dungeon. We got to dig the inscriptions into a rock." We'll fetch a rock. Okay, so now logs aren't good enough. So it's going to have to be harder and take longer.
Right, right. Because again, as you said, you have to do it right.
And I mean, Tom speaks with authority. So maybe the lesson here is don't listen to just about anyone who speaks with authority.
Shut up, silly woman.
Jim said the rock was worse than the logs. And Jim is right. He said it would take him such a pizen long time to dig them into a rock he wouldn't ever get out. But Tom said he would let me help him do it. Then he took a look to see how me and Jim was getting along with the pens. It was most pesky, tedious work and slow, as is reading this book, and didn't give my hands no show to get well of the sores. And we didn't seem to make no headway, hardly, so Tom says, "I know how to fix it. We got to have a rock for the coat of arms and mournful inscriptions, and we can kill two birds with the same rock. There's a gaudy big grindstone down at the mill, and we'll smouch it and carve the things on it and file out the pens and the saw on it too. It weren't no slouch of an idea, and it weren't no slouch of a grindstone nether, but we allowed we'd tackle it. It weren't quite midnight yet, so we cleared out for the mill, leaving Jim at work. We smouched the grindstone and set it out to roll her home, but it was a most nation-tough job.
I'll tell you what a nation-tough job is, getting through this plan to break Jim out.
It's tedious and long. We couldn't keep her from failing over, and she come mighty near mashing us every time. Tom said she was going to get one of us, sure, before we got through. We got her halfway, and then we was plumb played out and most drowned with sweat. We see it weren't no use. We got to go and fetch Jim. So he raised up his bed and slid the chain off of... He can free himself?
Literally, there's a piece of wood that they just have to take the little pin off, and the wood flies free with a big hole. It's a big door, and you just literally have to lift the edge of the bed up and pull the chain out.
Ah, God. Okay. And wrapped it round and round his neck, and we crawled out through our hole and down there, and Jim and me laid into that grindstone and walked her along like nothing. And Tom superintended. Oh, well, I don't like that. Why is he just watching?
Wait, so you're telling me that now Jim is literally free? They're outside moving the big grindstone.
Jim is free. Huck wants him to be free. And Tom is telling them what to do and supervising.
Huck and Jim need to put Jim's chain on Tom and leave. Just get the hell out.
Chain him to the grindstone and hop onto the river.
Yeah. God.
This has got to be Mark Twain being funny about how he's got to be pointing something out here, right? I hope he's not putting it on the enslaved people for being enslaved.
Oh, boy, I don't know. This is one of the weird things about reading something that is so old.
Yeah.
And written in, I mean, I'm not saying it's bad at all. I mean, because this is a really good book. But we are now part of the, I was going to say the MTV generation, but that's like a billion years ago. We're part of this TikTok generation now where we have to be hooked within 3 seconds or we move on to the next thing. And it's like this 4-chapter plan of so much tedious, like, let's go. We got it. Like, we totally get it.
No. I mean, I agree with you. It's not moving fast enough for me, but that's not the only thing that's irritating. It's irritating that Huck and Jim are listening to Tom. Like, they also listen to the king and the duke, and I don't know why they're listening to people. Is it because they speak with authority? Like, why are they giving these people authority over them? That's why I'm like, I hope that Mark Twain isn't making some kind of a comment about why didn't the enslaved people just free themselves? Like, why would they... I mean, Tom obviously doesn't have the law on his side or the weapons on his side.
I think you're right. I think people as a whole just listen to people who sound like they know what they're talking about. It's, I think, why we're in this situation with Trump right now. All his followers, like, they listen to him talk and it's like, well, he's a businessman and he's smart. He's just going to go negotiate. The war in Ukraine would just be over. Why? Because Donald Trump would negotiate. Well, what do you mean? How could that possibly work? He would do it. You know what I mean? Like, everything is just all authority and all bombastic. Just like, I can do it. Only I alone can do it. Tom is basically saying the same thing. Like, let's just go. We can literally get on the raft right now. No, that's not how it's done. Here's how it's done. I'm the one who read the books. Listen to me. Yeah, but the raft is sitting here and now we're pushing a big heavy stone. Oh my God, it's maddening.
And Tom superintended. He could out-superintend any boy I ever see.
The big thing that I do know from Tom Sawyer, the Tom Sawyer book, or at least the movie I saw when I was a youngster, is that he tricked a bunch of people, neighbor kids, to whitewash his fence.
Oh, I see. You see, that's one of the scenes I do remember from Tom Sawyer. Like, you hear about it. It's in pop culture. Yeah.
Boy, this is a real dud book. Sorry, Phil, from Mandarian Org. The only thing we remember about that story is that they painted a fence. Not too good, believe me.
He knowed how to do everything. Our hole was pretty big, but it weren't big enough to get the grindstone through. But Jim, he took the pick and soon made it big enough. And Tom marked out them things on it with the nail, and Jim set to work on them, with the nail for a chisel and an iron bolt for the rubbish in the lean-to for a hammer, and told him to work till the rest of his candle quit on him, and then he could go to bed and hide the grindstone under the straw tick and sleep on it. You know, I hate to interject again here, but I mean, if this was written just after the Civil War, maybe this is Mark Twain again trying to get people to change their minds. You know, just because people do things a certain way for the ages, it doesn't mean that's the smart way to do things. Like, there's probably a better way. Like, now that we have these freed Black people, why not, instead of seeing them as lesser or still treating them as enslaved people, maybe there's a different way we can live with them, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I do believe that's weird. Right.
Then we helped him fix his chain back on the bed leg and was ready for bed ourselves. But Tom thought of something and says, "You got any spiders in there, Jim?" "No, sir. Thank to goodness I hain't, Ma's Tom." "All right, we'll get you some. But bless you, honey, I don't want none. I's afraid of none. I just as soon have rattlesnakes around."
Oh, God. If we go on another rattlesnake adventure now.
I think it's coming, Dan.
Jesus.
Tom thought a minute or two and says, "It's a good idea, and I reckon it's been done. It must have been done. It stands to reason. Yes, it's a prime good idea. Where could you keep it?" "Keep what, Mars Tom?" "Why, a rattlesnake." "De goodness gracious alive, Mars Tom. Why, if dey was a rattlesnake to come in here, I'd take and bust right out through that log wall wid my head." "Why, Jim, you wouldn't be afraid of it for a little. You could tame it." "Tame it? Yes, easy enough. Every animal is grateful for kindness and petting, and they wouldn't think of hurting a person that pets them. Any book will tell you that."
You dumb kid.
"Don't believe what's in the books." Oh my gosh. Like, I wish that this would be the thing that tips the scale for Jim. These kids are nuts. I have to get out of here.
I'm gone. Now. Bye. God, right? Just the fact that he just said he would just headbutt his way out through the wood log wall. Just do it.
Like, why is he more afraid of a rattlesnake than being enslaved?
I mean, I don't think he's picking one. I think it all sucks. But again, it goes back to your original point. Why is he listening to him?
I think it's just out of tradition. You listen to the educated white person, right?
I guess, but his whole thing is he's escaping. Like, he's saying, hey, that whole old thing about whitey owning Black people, I'm out of that. I'm breaking free. I left. I'm just on my way out the door. I somehow can't seem to get my entire body out of the door, but I'm on my way out. I think that whole tradition is BS. Mm. Like, I just don't know why. But you know what? I think he loves Huck.
Do you think Tom does? No, that you
no,
think
I
Jim
think
does.
Jim. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, let's see what happens next. They're going to probably get him a snake. "You try. That's all I ask. You just try for 2 or 3 days. Why, you can get him so in a little while that he'll love you and sleep with you and won't stay away from you a minute. And we'll let you wrap him around your neck and put his head in your mouth. Please, Ma's Tom, don't talk so. I can't stand it. He'd let me shove his head in my mouth for a favor, hain't it? I lay he'd wait a powerful long time for I asked him, and more than that, I don't want him to sleep with me."
Mm-hmm. Jen goes,
"Jim, don't act so foolish. A prisoner's got to have some kind of a dumb pet, and if a rattlesnake hain't ever been tried, why, there's more glory to be gained in your being the first ever to try it than any other way you could ever think of to save your life."
The snake. It's called the snake. One morning, down the path along the lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor, half-frozen snake. That snake gave her a vicious bite.
"I don't like spiders and snakes.
Oh, shut up, silly woman," said the reptile with a grin.
"I don't like spiders and snakes.
You knew damn well I was a snake before you took me in.
Like I want to be loved by you."
"Shut up, silly woman.
Jim, don't act so foolish. A prisoner's got to have some kind of a dumb pet. And if a rattlesnake ain't ever been tried, why, there's more glory to be gained in your being the first to ever try it than any other way you could ever think of to save your life. Why, Mars Tom, I don't want no such glory. Snake take and bite Jim's chin off. Den where's the glory? No, sir, I don't want no such doings. Blame it, can't you try? I only want you to try. You needn't keep it up if you don't work. But the trouble all done if the snake bite me while I's a-trying him. Mars Tom, I's willing to tackle most anything at ain't unreasonable, but if you and Huck fetches a rattlesnake in here for me to tame, I's going to leave, that's sure. Well then, if I was Huck, I would throw a snake in there. Because I want my friend to be safe.
Oh.
I'd be like, here's your snake, now bust out with your head.
Use like your head, Kool-Aid hit that man. Log wall.
Oh, God. Well then, let it go if you're so bullheaded about it. We can get you some garter snakes, and you can tie some buttons on their tails and let on that they're rattlesnakes. And I reckon that'll have to do.
Oh, why don't you just get a rope then and let him, everyone, we just gave him a big snake, a python piece of string.
I can stand him, Mars Tom, but blame it if I can get along without him. I tell you dat, I never knowed before 'twas so much bother and trouble to be a prisoner. Well, it's always is when it's done right. You got any rats around here? No, sir, I hain't seed none. Well, we'll get you some rats. Why, Mars Tom, I don't want no rats. Days to dad blameless creatures to disturb a body and rustle round over him and bite his feet when he's trying to sleep, I ever see. No, sir, gimme garter snakes, if I's got to have 'em, but don't give me no rats. I hain't got no use for 'em. But, Jim, you got to have 'em. They all do. So don't make no more fuss about it. Prisoners ain't ever without rats. There ain't no instance of it. And they train them, and pet them, and learn them tricks, and they got to be as sociable as flies. But you got to play music to them. You got anything to play music on? I ain't got nothing but a coast comb and a piece of paper and a juice harp, but I reckon they wouldn't want no stock in a juice harp. Yes, they would. They don't care what kind of music 'tis. A juice harp's plenty good enough for a rat. All animals like music. In a prison, they dote on it. Specifically painful music. And you can't get no other kind out of a juice harp. That doesn't sound sad and mournful to me. It sounds silly.
It sounds
Am I wrong?
Fun.
Yes, you're all right. You're fixed very well. You want to set on your bed nights before you go to sleep and early in the morning and play your juice harp. That's the thing that'll scoop a rat quicker than anything else. And when you've played about 2 minutes, you'll see all the rats and the snakes and spiders and things begin to feel worried about you and come. Sounds like a Disney movie.
The Pied Piper.
And they'll just fairly swarm over you and have a noble good time. Yes, they will, I reckon, Mars Tom. But what kinder time is Jim having? Blessed if I can see de punt, but I'll do it if I got to.
He don't got to.
I reckon I better keep de animals satisfied and not have trouble in de house. Tom waited to think it over and see if they wasn't nothing else. And pretty soon he says, oh, there's one thing I forgot. Could you raise a flower here, do you reckon? I don't know, but maybe I could, Mars Tom. But it's tolerable dark in here. And I ain't got no use for no flower, no how. And she'd be a powerful sight of trouble. Well, you try it anyway. Some other prisoners has done it. One or dem big cattail-looking mullein stalks would grow in here, Mars Tom, I reckon. But she wouldn't be worth half the trouble she'd cost. Don't you believe it. We'll fetch you a little one, and you plant it in the corner over there and raise it. And you want to water it with your tears. Why, I got plenty spring water, Mars Tom. You don't want spring water. You want to water it with your tears. It's the way they always do. Why, Mars Tom, I lay I can raise one or dem mullein stalks twist wid spring water whilst another man's a-startin' one wid tears. That ain't the idea. You got to do it with tears. She'll die in my hands, Mars Tom. She surely will, 'cause I don't scarcely ever cry. So Tom was stumped, but he studied it over and then said Jim would have to worry along the best he could with an onion. He promised he would go to the N-word cabins and drop one in Jim's coffee pot in the morning. That makes me want to vomit. Like the grossest idea I've ever heard.
Onion and coffee?
Yeah, an onion in your coffee pot.
It's really gross.
Jim found so much fault with it. Yeah, me too, Jim. You and me both. And with the work and bother of raising the mullein, and Jews harping the rats, and petting and flattering up the snakes and spiders and things, on top of all the other work he had to do on pens and inscriptions and journals and things, which made it more trouble and worry and responsibility to be a prisoner than anything he ever undertook, that Tom most lost all patience with them, and said he was just loading down with more gaudier chances than a prisoner ever had in the world to make a name for himself. And yet he didn't know enough to appreciate them, and they was just about wasted on him. So Jim, he was sorry, and said he wouldn't behave so no more. And then me and Tom shoved for bed. End of chapter. So we didn't get anywhere. We just dug the hole deeper. Like, it's getting worse. It's getting worse, Dan. I believe this book was written, like, in three parts. The first part was Huck, like, explaining Huck, right? Maybe it's four parts. Explaining Huck, who he is, all that. Get to know the character. Part two, my favorite part. Escaping with Jim down the river. The fun adventures they had together. And that was genuinely my favorite time. And I long for that. And then we had this horrible thing with the Duke and the King, which kind of went on a little bit too long. And now we've got this nightmare with Tom. And it's like, I see the end of the book coming, and I'm afraid we're not going to get much more time with Huck and Jim together again. And that makes me really sad.
It's time for PPP, problematic points to ponder. What, if anything, would be considered banworthy in this chapter?
The N-word came up again. Other than that, I mean, kind of making fun, poking fun at society. You can apply it to just about any part of society that lives off of tradition.
Yeah. And again, I could see where that would make people uncomfortable because, like, if you're right, it's like, oh, is this really how we look? Are we this dumb? Maybe.
Yeah. And then, like, looking at the politics, you're like, oh my God, you're just going off some stupid tradition. And now you're like making laws that start to control people. And it's like, I can't believe we're in this position right now in this country. Here we are.
I think we're going back. We're on a raft going backwards.
It's time for News of the Band. Insights on political missteps, book bans, and the misguided Luddites behind them. And now, from the Band Camp News Desk, here are Jennifer Davis and Dan Schultz reporting.
Thank you, Robot. Let's get into a story that is happening in the world of banned books, etc. Washington State Democrats push through historic bill to shield educational materials from bans.
Yes, we have a pretty good legislature, and it just goes to show you that it's important to vote for every single race, every single time there's an election, because there's more than a presidential election every 4 years. You have to vote for your state legislature and, of course, your senator and House of Rep, Washington, D.C. You got to vote every single time, people. This is what makes the difference. So this would prohibit Washington schools from banning books solely because they were written by or about members of marginalized groups. For example, people of color and the LGBTQ plus community.
What I love about this story, I was reading it, and it really illustrates the differences between both parties here. Democrats like Senator Emily Randall is saying loud and clear, books save lives. They believe it's crucial for students to have access to materials that reflect their own lives and identities. So that's the Democrat take.
100%, right.
But I don't know anything about this guy, Senator Jim McCoon.
He's basically everything that's wrong.
Listen to what he said. On the other hand, Republicans like Senator Jim McCoon speaking out are worried about content that they consider inappropriate, especially criticizing books they see as having, quote, dirty sexual talk.
I don't know what he means by that, but...
Well, that's how they can tie into the LGBTQ plus kind of stuff.
What do you mean?
They equate anything gay with being sex. Like, they're all, it's related to people having sex. That's where they're going to try to fight it.
Princess stories where the prince kisses the princess and they ride off together and they're in love and they get married. That's okay because it's heterosexual. But if you put in two princes there, then that's dirty to this guy. I don't know what he means by that. When all this book banning was going on, like in 2022, 2 years ago, when my daughter was in first grade, her teacher was engaged and getting married. And she's straight. She was talking about her fiance and, you know, I'm okay with teachers sharing personal things. We're going to get married on this day and, you know, whatever, like, that's fine. But like the thing that's sad is like, if she were to marry another woman, like that wouldn't be okay, right? For some of these people. A lot of the time they argue that you shouldn't have a state law because, well, that doesn't represent who we are over here. And I'm sorry to say it, but it's usually in more rural areas like Eastern Washington, mm-hmm. which is largely agricultural and more mm-hmm. conservative. We need to protect the minorities. Like that's a huge part of what America is, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And especially kids in places like that need to know they are okay and there's nothing yeah. wrong with them and that you can live safely. You know, because a lot of kids who live in areas like that, they have a shit life. They get bullied and beat up and, you know, maybe even thrown out of their family. So
they're constantly being told that they're broken or they're not welcome. They're not, like, they don't deserve to even exist.
Or that there's something wrong with them. So they need yeah. to have access to these books. And I'm glad that this will be a Washington state-wide law. Kids need to have representation.
Right. From Ben-worthy to Binge-worthy.
Hey, fans of Bandcamp. My name is J.P. Darbagosian. I love Bandcamp because fighting back against book bans was one of the reasons why I launched the podcast, This Queer Book Saved My Life. As I saw LGBTQ books being banned from schools and politicians saying we can't even say the word gay in our classrooms, I thought we need to get into how important queer books are and how they save lives. And in some cases on the podcast, we mean that literally. On each episode, a new LGBTQ guest shares with us the book that helped them find the language to come out or begin their gender transition or deal with homophobia in their family. And then we bring in the book's author to find out what it took to write that book. How did it get out into the world? How did it change the author? We were just nominated for a GLAAD Media Award for Outstanding Podcast, and I hope that you can check out This Queer Book Saved My Life everywhere you stream your podcasts.
All right. Well, we've caused enough literary chaos for today. Thank you for listening, scary book people. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with one person to whom it would add value. Bandcamp is produced and hosted by Jennifer Davis and me, Dan Schultz. All media used in this production was done so under the protection of fair use. See you guys next time.
Bye.